Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hi, and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo. We are going to be talking today about a subject that I know is of interest to so many of you. And I love the title of this book because, in a way, you don't quite know what it means until it's explained a little bit. How to know if it's time to go. And like I said, this isn't about a funeral. It's about relationships. In fact, it's a 10-step reality test for a marriage and or a relationship, and two people put it together, Dr. Lawrence Birnbach and Dr. Beverly Hyman. And Dr. Birnbach is the person who is with us today talking about this fascinating publication. Welcome to the show, Dr. Birnbach.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Do you mind if I call you Lawrence?
You can call me Lawrence. Absolutely.
Fabulous. Now, you're a psychoanalyst who works with individuals and couples, you know, that are going through tough times in relationships. You work in New York City and in Westport, Connecticut. And then Dr. Beverly Hyman, she's an international business and organizational consultant. And
right.
Her specialty is conflict management, negotiation. She's worked at the UN. She works with women and children. Now, here you are, the two of you. You both have knowledge from different arenas of experience. Why did you decide that it would be good for the two of you to collaborate together on having a reality test relative to relationships, marriage? Why?
Well, you know, the obvious answer there is that it was a very personal subject for each of us. We had recently, when we started collaborating on this, recently been through our own divorces from previous marriages.
Ah.
And we had each had children from the previous marriage. And we met as singles. And we, in talking with each other, we were worried about how the divorce that we had recently experienced would affect our children. And we were worried how it would affect us, but we were particularly worried how it would affect our children. And we were talking with each other, and we had in our heads all the stuff that people have in their heads. You know, you should stay together for the sake of the children.
Oh,
and
I get so wary of that one.
Right. And being somewhat, you know, academics that we are, we were both involved with universities at the time, we decided to kind of do a little research on it and maybe write an article. And, it was, you know, here we were in the first flush of love with each other. And so anything we could collaborate on, you know, seemed like a good idea. And so when we started doing some research on it, we started finding out that much of what we believed was really sort of inaccurate, and that we discovered that there were many myths that we write about in the book about what happens when you go through a divorce, and
mm-hmm.
What happens when you stay in an unhappy marriage. The mythology there is, except under the worst conditions, you should stick it out for the sake of the children. Well, we found out that really, by and large, just the opposite is true, that unhappy marriages are bad for children, they're bad for adults, and better divorces, single-parent families that are stable, are better for children than unhappy marriages. And so that led, you know, one thing led to another, and we wrote this article, and ultimately it became a book.
Well, I'll tell you, you bring up some very, very good points, and right at the very beginning of your book, you have 10 steps to a decision. Having gone through some of this myself many years ago, I'm just going to skip through them real quickly. One, determine, you know, is your marriage really happy or unhappy? Ask yourself, you know, parenting, is it good, is it bad? How old are your children? What, look at your kids. Is the marriage you're in affecting them? Face the truth. Boy, that's a big one. Man alive, I can remember going through a state of denial that it would have been almost, what do I want to say? You know, biblical.
Right.
I mean, it was out there. Deny, deny, deny. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that there's members of my audience that can say, oh boy, was I stuck there too. And
well,
then,
so was I.
Oh my goodness. It's amazing what we do. And a lot of it comes about because mm-hmm. of indoctrination and training and not thinking for yourself. Access, is it affecting you physically, mentally, spiritually, emotionally, taking an inventory, evaluating your situation realistic, which is not easy for most people to do, facing fears. I can't tell you how many times I have heard men and women both having fears, but especially women.
Absolutely.
I think it's just unbelievable, and take an inventory and then deciding. Decision, taking charge. Being
right. Now, these are all very, very difficult steps to take. Mm-hmm. And so we try to walk people through the ways to really, you know, even just starting at the beginning. Am I in an unhappy marriage? It's very hard to know sometime. Or am I just going through a rough patch? You know, are we bogged down, you know, temporarily? Or have we really tried and tried to get unstuck and we're still bogged down?
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is where the denial comes in, and people will say, oh well, you know, maybe next year it'll be better. And you know, my experience is that even in this very modern day and age, people take marriage as seriously as they ever did, and you know, they really want it to work.
They really do. And I think that there is a shift that I think has been good in that if and I don't say it works all the time, but to take time to get to know somebody.
Mm-hmm.
That is one of the most difficult processes. I think that there is so much myth that's perpetuated in movies, and it's a Cinderella syndrome, I call it.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't realize that when you do make a commitment to someone, you're going to have some rough spots. There could be illness. I mean, I know of a couple that I married within 6 months, 3 months, 3 months, not 6 months, 3 months. The husband was in the hospital, major mm-hmm. heart problems. He thought he was in perfect health. This guy mm-hmm. was, his life was on the edge. What mm-hmm. his wife went through was absolutely incredible. Now, they were newlyweds.
Right.
And since then, they have had some real challenges because that took so much energy. That was such a trauma.
Mm-hmm.
But now they're beginning to find out, you know, what real living together is.
Right.
So it, you know, there's, you have things that hit, and life is not a fairy tale. Life mm-hmm. is something that demands experience and participation. And I guarantee you, there just about everybody's going to have body odor. Sometimes you're not going to be working very hard. Other times you may not be particularly nice.
Without a question. And people kind of forget or maybe don't even realize, you know, that the courtship is completely different from marriage. And that in courtship, it's all about, you know, fun and sexuality, and I can't, you know, I want to spend as much time with you as I possibly can. And marriage, you try to preserve that, but marriage is a lot about mutual responsibilities and sharing a life. And, mm-hmm. You know, and people sometimes aren't prepared for the, you know, the responsibility angle of marriages, and that life just overwhelms the fun and enjoyment that they used to have with each other, and that gets lost. And I've found that over and over in working with people, that they've just lost the what originally got them together.
The Marriage Bill of Rights. You have that in your book. Tell my audience what this represents, what it is, and why it is something that is viable.
Okay. you know, nowadays everybody has a Bill of Rights. You know, there's the Bill of Rights in the Constitution, and hospital patients and airline passengers and children and even animals have Bills of Rights. But we realized when we were writing the book that there is nothing like that for marriages. And we realized that there are certain kind of bedrock issues that without it in a marriage, the marriage is not going to thrive. And so we listed, we thought about it, and we listed 10 different, what we consider to be inalienable rights that every marriage should have or should struggle towards. And we've actually been told that people who are engaged should be looking at these bills of rights, at these mm-hmm. rights. So, for example, everybody in a marriage has a right to be respected. And mm-hmm. yet there are so many times in so many marriages where people treat each other without respect or consistently treat each other without respect. We have a right to affection. Many people have said to me over the years, they just feel the affection has gone out of their marriage. Many people have said that they don't feel their spouse is loyal to them. Not even necessarily having an affair, but just being closer with other family members, closer with other friends, not taking the spouse's side. So we have this whole list of about 10 different, what we feel are really inalienable rights.
Yes.
Right
no.
to have a protector to kind mm-hmm. of buffer you from the difficulties in the world. Somebody who's on your side. Somebody who gives you a pat on the back, affirmation, a pat mm-hmm. on the back, at least, you know, somewhat often, and approves of you. So mm-hmm. these are what we feel are sort of the bedrock things that people need to have in order for a marriage to work right.
One of the things that I feel is significant is that when people get married, you're never going to know everything about somebody, and you usually want to present your best side.
Absolutely.
But when you make a commitment to another person, it's as if you're entering in a whole different level of learning, and mm-hmm. it can be involving children, it can be involving financial perspectives, it can be involving just ad infinitum, the mm-hmm. variable.
Mm-hmm.
And that is where I think sometimes the actual making that commitment positioning. It's one thing when you have a relationship and you know mm-hmm. that the front door is there, or the back door, that you can make your exit whenever you want.
Mm-hmm.
But it's when you make that commitment,
mm-hmm.
and I'd like your feedback on this, when you make that commitment, and it's very significant, you may find that other person doesn't have that commitment, that maybe they had an ulterior motive, like a guy wanted a housewife. He'd do everything, mm-hmm. you know, you're fine, mm-hmm. but he wanted a housewife.
Uh-huh.
So you find that out, and you go, excuse me, but maybe you've been taught that something, by golly, you stay in this, no matter
mm-hmm.
what.
Mm-hmm.
I found a fascinating statistic that you gave, and that was the myth, I said statistic, there is a myth that women will be impoverished, and you found in research that most women, within five years after they had gotten their divorce, were financially better off than they had been in their marriage.
Well, not necessarily better off, but back to living at the same, you know, roughly the same economic mm-hmm. level that they had been in the marriage. That at, in the first year or two, there may be some disruption, and maybe, you know, they will decline, but by 5 years out, close to 90% of people, both men and women, have recovered to the approximate economic level that they were at beforehand.
Let's talk about kids for a moment, because this is very important. And I've known people that have stayed in marriages because they said, well, I have my children, and I've known circumstances that go on. I said, what in the world are you thinking of? Do you realize that these kids aren't dumb? And you have a report that you investigated by Abigail Stewart, who is a psychologist and professor at the University of Michigan. She studied 160 divorced families and found absolutely no evidence that divorce is more traumatic for children than holding a bad marriage together. Now, that's a point. Is it worse when the couple stays together, or is it, you know, terrible when they separate? And she's saying, no, what's the deal here? Get out of the bad marriage.
The key component is conflict and alienation. People who are, you know, unable to settle any of their differences, and you know, you said commitment is a key, you know, piece here. When people are really committed to working out their differences, it may take time, but they can work through these issues. When the issues don't get worked through, and these are issues about, you know, that we list about nine of them in the book, money issues, parenting, sexual issues, alcohol and drug use, household responsibilities, things like that. Again, kind of common sense stuff. When people are at, you know, absolute loggerheads, they're just stuck, they can't agree on some of these issues, either they argue about it fairly often, or they just give up arguing, but they have enormous anger for the other person in a variety of areas. And the anger tends to spread. So, for example, a couple that I worked with, the husband made a very good living. The wife was a kind of a stay-at-home mom. They had several kids. And she really enjoyed spending money. And he would say, look, I earn a good living, but I can't keep up with the level of the of money that you're spending. And she'd say, well, don't you want your kids to be dressed as well as, you know, their playmates? And he'd say, yes, but, she'd say, well, you know, don't you want the house to look as nice as our friends' houses? Yes, but. And he could never get through to her, and he felt very powerless. They had terrible fights, but every month when the credit card bills would come in, they would be enormous as far as he was concerned. And she was really unwilling to really, she'd say, I'm going to rein it in, and then she wouldn't. Mm-hmm. And he used that as an excuse to use alcohol more than he might have. He might have restrained himself more, and some illegal, you know, use of marijuana and so on. He started flirting with other women because he was upset with her. And this is not to justify what he was doing, but these things tend to be, they tend to spread. So if you're upset and you're not resolving the issues with your partner, it tends to creep into other areas of the marriage. And so, this is where things really go downhill. And we really talk in the book about taking what we call this marriage test, this reality test. See where you're stuck. See where the strengths are. See where the weaknesses are. At the end of each chapter in the book, we have several questions, and we compile all the questions at the end of the book. They're just yes and no questions. And
I think that's good.
Right. And at the end, you can really see what's going on in the marriage, and it gives you a beginning of how to start straightening things out. It's talking points. This is what you need to talk with your partner about and say, look, I'm unhappy because, you know, we can't agree on how to spend money, or we can't agree on how to parent the kids. You know, you say I'm too strict and I say you're too lenient. We've got to find a way to get onto the same page.
And that is a challenge. There's a lot of things that have to be worked through, and sometimes there are compromises that have to be made, and
there's
depending on a person.
Always, There's always going to be compromises. There's always going to be aspects of your partner that drive you crazy and that you've got to find a way to work with, and you have to compromise a little and they have to compromise a little. But that's the nature of a successful marriage. Because of the commitment that you were talking about earlier. We're committed to really working it out with each other. And so in our book, even though the title is How to Know If It's Time to Go, we view divorce as a last resort. The next of the last chapter in the book is Have You Tried Every Remedy? And we go through a whole list of possible ways to try to make things better. And you know, it's, again, nothing. It's not rocket science. Talking with each other, counseling, talking to a clergyman or woman who you trust, you know, finding ways to bridge the gaps.
I think one of the biggest things in a relationship is owning up to personal responsibility, and that each partner, instead of getting into the blame game, really look at what is going on. Facing the truth was one of the things we first mentioned when we started chatting at the top of the hour. And that is really an issue. And I can remember many, many, many years ago when I was in a very bad marriage, there was something that my spouse did not want me to do because there were ulterior motives. When I finally saw that clearly, then I had no difficulty in saying, this is what I'm going to do, because I'm not staying in this. Now that I have seen the truth, I understand it, and it's clear. And he didn't deny anything. So that enabled me then to make a plan and to be very strategic about it, which stunned him because he didn't think that that is what would happen. But that's beside the point. The point is, and I just relate my own personal experience, is that someone has to make a decision. And what's interesting, and I learned this years ago, and it's still true today according to the research that you went through, two-thirds of the divorces are initiated by women, not men.
Yes, yes, and that surprises a lot of people.
It was a big surprise to me over 20 years ago, and to know that it's still the case today is still a surprise.
Yes, and the biggest reason that women give is not infidelity, although that, you know, is, you know, not uncommon as a reason, and it's not domestic violence, because that, fortunately, is a fairly small percentage of women that say that. The biggest reason women give is that my husband won't change. My husband won't meet me halfway. All he says to me is, look, I'm still the same guy you married 20 years ago. And the woman says, yeah, that's the problem. She's changed. She's probably out in the workforce now. She, you know, has learned that other people appreciate her for lots of reasons, and maybe her husband is still treating her like she's a young girl.
You talk about women that are below the poverty line, and this is something that's very significant. Many of the couples that are married that are in that poverty level of life.
Right.
The husband's fathers are frequently men who have limited education, have never worked, or who have been imprisoned, thus vastly limiting their capability of being a productive member of society.
Right.
And these often are very abusive relationships.
They can be,
sure. Many levels. And it is something that often these people are put down for getting a divorce. And there's all kinds of myths about this. And that, you know, a divorce is a horrible thing. And my goodness, that goes back so many generations, and that was a power play.
Sure.
That was being very manipulative, both on the part of men as well as women.
Well, I clearly agree with you, and you know, an abusive relationship, a relationship that is filled with physical abuse or verbal abuse or sexual abuse, is just really something that people should get out of. And it's easy to identify physical abuse. It's pretty easy to identify sexual abuse. Verbal abuse can be pretty confusing for the person who is absorbing it. They often blame themselves for creating, you know, the rage in the other person. But if you're in a situation like that, you need help. You need to seek help, and you need to, like, find a way to get counseling, whether it's through your church or through a professional counselor.
Mm-hmm.
And because it is terrible, it's horrible for the children, it's terrible for the for all the adults. It causes physical illness, it causes depression, it causes, you know, people to feel terrible about themselves, and it causes children who then wind up being out of control.
Also, one of the very big things that occurs, and you bring this out in your book, is the mind-body connection, and how many people who are in very bad marriages, unhappy marriages, have physical problems that they wouldn't have otherwise. And when they get, and that happened to me. That was in the marriage I was describing. I got out of that marriage. My health went, I mean, I had all kinds of horrific things that happened to me. And I didn't know about the mind-body connection many years ago, but I figured it out on my own. And then once I got the divorce, everything that had been there that was a negative was gone. I mean, I wasn't dealing with that anymore.
Well, as we point out in the book, the incidence of all kinds of illnesses, and we have a huge list in the book, but, you know, common things like colds and flus and back pains and headaches and dental problems, you know, like periodontal problems, and all kinds of high blood pressure, you name it. People who are unhappily married have higher incidence of it than people who report being in happier marriages.
I wanted to share, because I know we're running out of time here, a factor that so often is considered, especially on the part of women, and has to do with money. So don't let fears about money, about your children, about being alone, or your concern about other people's reactions to your separating cloud your judgment or paralyze you. If you stay, stay because you sincerely want to commit and dedicate yourself to making your marriage better, to working it out with this other worthwhile human being and not just accepting the present unhappy status quo. Stay because you have hope that your spouse will join you in the effort. And I think that those words are good. The reality is we have to make the choices, and we have to be responsible, I feel, for those choices and owe up to them. Stop putting the blame game on someone else. Realize when you're making a commitment with someone else, another human being, like you said, they're going to have all kinds of weak links inside of them. That's the nature of being human. But
absolutely,
it is the quality and the character of the person. Do you want to wake up 30 years from now and sharing the same bed with them? How do you feel about it? Do you want to be there? And that, those are the questions that need to be answered. And that takes time to honestly figure out.
Well, I was just going to say, and in figuring these things out, I think, you know, and we've touched on it a couple of times in the conversation, is looking at what your contributing to also make things less than ideal. What are you doing that's not helpful? And that's the hardest part. It's really easy to see what our spouses are doing wrong. It's less easy to see what we're doing wrong.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. I think that again, that's where being honest with yourself is very important. Sometimes there's a dependency factor here, and you need to say, sorry, you can't spend on me anymore. I was just talking with a young lady yesterday that's what she did. She has a health situation in the family. She said to her husband, I'm not taking responsibility for you taking care of yourself anymore. I'm sick and tired of being blamed for you having these health problems. She said, you take charge. You take positioning. This is what I'm going to do for me. You be the boss of your own space. It was really a big step for her because culturally she was taught to do exactly the opposite, that she was supposed to be the mother, the nursemaid, and all this stuff. Boy, has it changed him. It has been wonderful. It's been very good for him.
that's a challenge for her to do that, though. I'm sure that, you know, the many times she feels a desire to go back into that old way.
Oh, yeah, but she said, I'm seeing good results here, so I'm not going back. Now, Dr. Birnbach, I want to thank you so much for being with me today. Your website is How to Know When It's Time to Go. Just
how
the
to
exact
know,
title?
No, How to Know If It's Time to Go.
If It's Time to Go. Stand
right.
Corrected. How to Know If It's Time to Go. And
dot
again,
com.
Dot com. Got to put that dot com on there.
Right.
That is how you get there. How to Know If It's Time to Go dot com. And you'll be able to find out more about this. There's all kinds of stuff on the website. The book is amazing. Lots of questions for you to ask yourself. So if you are sort of walking the fence, wondering, why not pick up the book? How to Know If It's Time to Go, a 10-step reality test for your marriage and or your current relationship. Again, Dr. Birnbach, thank you so much for being with me. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Welcome, my lords and ladies, to the Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair, located at Maris Farms in Buckley, Washington. For 3 weekends in August, starting August 7th and 8th, we will transport you back to the days of old, where magic and merriment reign. Come see the multitude of musicians, dancers, jugglers, gypsies, peasants, nobles, pirates, and prestidigitation. That's magic for you commoners. Learn to swing a sword or shoot a bow and be knighted by Her Majesty the Queen. Hold your breath as jousters wheel their mounts around to engage in full contact combat on the field of battle. Sign on to sail the seas with scurvy pirates, or sit down with friends and family for turkey legs and a fine brewed ale. Delights abound for the young and old at the Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair, so come one and all, starting August 7th and 8th, for fun and excitement, and may your day be fair. For tickets and info, go to www.washingtonfair.com.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay only $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 1-800-872-8852. That's 1-800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Gedros. Buy it today. 1-800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna, and if you'd like to call in and chat with me, letting me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, the telephone number is 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Now, I do know we've got a caller on the line, but before I go to that caller, you've just heard the Washington Renaissance Midsummer Fair play. And I want to let those of you know that are in the state of Washington, if you'd like, I've got a few free passes left. This event is going to be starting up not this weekend, but the next weekend, the first 3 weekends in August. It's going to be absolutely incredible. I'm going to be there in a booth, but this is a free family pass for 2 adults, 2 children. So if you would like to get a free pass, send me an email. Send it to Donna at DelphiInternational.com, or you give me a call. It's faster to call me at 800-872-8852, and I'll get that pass, that family pass out to you right away. So do get in touch with me. And again, that's the first 3 weekends in August at the Maris Farms, Buckley, Washington. Oh, this is so much fun. I just love being out there. Also, if you have a story about the paranormal, an experience that really was very meaningful to you, I would love to hear it. I would love to read it, is what I really should say. Send me an email, because I'm putting these stories together for a book to submit it to a publishing house, and I'd love to have your story included. So if you will send me your story to Donna at Delphi DonnaDelphi International.com. That's Donna at DelphiInternational.com. Be sure to put in the subject line that this is a story for Donna's book or the equivalent thereof. Oh, do the same thing when if you're wanting a free pass to the Rin Fair in Buckley, Washington in August. Do the same thing. Send that and say free ticket and for Rin Fair. Something that helps me to identify the email. I get so many every day that I go through and I just have to purge out a whole bunch. But make sure you make that special note in the subject line. But I'd like to hear your story. I really would. Because I think when we can share our stories and our experiences, we are going to empower other people. And that's what I'd like to do with this book. Donna Sebo here, 888-815-9756. Let's go to our first caller. Welcome to the show, first name or initial, and where are you calling from?
Sharon, and I'm calling from Tucson.
Hi, Sharon. All right, first thing that I'm looking at for you, and by the way, I wish you'd do a little tom-tom dance and send some sunshine our way. My goodness, it's so gray and gloomy here in the Pacific Northwest. But anyhow, we're down in the low 60s. It's chilly. Anyhow, what I wanted to say to you right off the bat is I'm seeing you gritting your teeth. And as I'm watching you go through this, you're deliberately not saying what you are thinking, which is good. This is not bad. You're wanting to think before you speak. But you're feeling an agitation, and you are going to need to understand that whoever this person is that is expressing their opinion and or what they are deeming absolutes, those absolutes can change. They're not going to be stuck in concrete. But this person has a demeanor, a presence, where they're very authoritarian. So when you're dealing with this person, you need to not be intimidated by them. And you need to say, well, are you sure that this is the only option that you can look at? They say, oh, yeah, right, it is. So, well, you know what? Let me just share some thoughts with you. And then you can mull it over and see how you feel about it. And then we'll talk again. How about that? Well, you're going to find them very impatient. And that's because they're not really listening to what you're saying. Their mind is going off onto other topics. They're looking at you, and if you watch their eyes, you're going to see their eyes are not focused. They're not focusing on you. You don't have their attention. So that's something you need to remember. You need to watch their eyes. You need to watch their body language. You need to look at them and say, I don't seem to have their attention. And so you may need to do something like taking a spoon and tapping a glass and say, oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to disrupt you. But you'll notice the shift in their eyes where they will come back and they will be present with you. But they're going off into all kinds of directions in their mind space, and they don't know how to break that habit. It's just a part of who they are. So you need to be sure you have their attention when you are offering options. Because if you don't have their attention, they're not going to hear a word you're saying. They might nod and do all of the proper physiological responses, but they're not going to be with you. So you've got to be sure you have the eye contact, and you've got to be sure that you are aware that they truly are listening to you. And that's when you're going to be able to drop the different options of consideration into their mental lap, and then they'll be able to hear what you are saying. Quite frankly, it appears to me like you're talking to a brick wall, but that's something you're going to have to get past, especially if you want to deal with this person. You need to understand who they are, how they think, and the fact that they seem to pride themselves on being a multitasker, but they're not getting things done. Do you have a question for me?
Well, I am hoping that I'm contacted soon, any day now, and securing a job position. And I wondered if you picked up any information on that.
No, I'm not getting anything. When were you expecting to hear from something? I'm not seeing anything these next 3 to 5 days, if that's what you were looking at.
Okay. Well,
is there any way you can follow up on this yourself?
Yeah, I have been. I have been.
Well, I think that's what you're going to need to do. But I wouldn't hold my breath.
Okay.
I think you need to keep yourself out there. Keep looking. Don't just focus on one thing. That's going to be a big mistake. You need to be able to have more than one aspect going for you. What kind of work are you looking for?
Anything. You know, just anything.
No, that's not going to work. You need to focus. You really need to look at the arena that you'd like to be in. If you wanted to be in the hospitality industry, if you wanted to be in the technological industry, if you wanted to be in the medical industry, you need to look at the arena you really would like to be involved with.
Okay.
I mean, you can sling hamburgers at a joint if you wanted to do that. That's something to do. So you need to really ask yourself, what environment would you like to be in?
Okay.
And that's what I would say you need to look at. And look at that, focus on that, and then you have a better option. And if it's not in the area you're in, ask yourself where else you could go. Don't lock yourself into just one place.
Okay. Well, thank you.
You're very welcome, dear. Good luck to you.
Thanks.
This is Donna Sebo. If you'd like to give me a buzz, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. If you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking about good medicine, a return to common sense. Boy, I'll tell you, it's so invigorating to hear more and more professionals talk about nutrition. I was talking with someone just yesterday who is a very serious diabetic, has had major problems, and finally has gotten into the vitamin supplementation program that's working for them physically. They're really attentive to how they're eating, and the turnaround for them has been absolutely amazing. They are working towards getting off of medication, and they're taking total responsibility for researching and finding out what they need to know that's right for them. And what is so incredible is that this person said, by golly, this is what I have to do for me. And this person has been working on trying to shift their physiological condition for 20 years. And finally, when she went back to her doctor, she had blood tests done before she started on this nutritional direction, and then she had them done after being in this awareness, and she's been keeping very careful records on everything. Her blood sugar was down, everything shifted, and her doctor said, I don't know what you're doing. He said, you've got to tell me what you're doing. So she told him about the vitamin supplementation she started. She told him about the enzyme she was taking. She told him about how she had changed her diet. And he said, well, you better keep it up. And she said, yeah, do you want to read some information that I found out about? Her doctor was totally unaware. He kept giving her medication and medication and medication. See, as consumers, we need to educate ourselves. Now, her doctor is open to being educated. But she said he didn't have a clue about nutrition. And medicines were having side effects with her. So I share that with you because at any moment, and the moment can be now, you can take responsibility for your own wellness, for your own life, stop a blame game, start educating yourself. It's very, very important. And this is even relevant to the job environment. Don't be afraid of change. And we've got so much change that's going on at this time. If you're a person that likes to work with your hand, learn about becoming an electrician. Learn about plumbing. Learning how to tool wood. I don't care what it is. Not everybody's going to be college material. You don't have to be. Just because you're an academic doesn't mean you're going to have a good job. There's a lot of changes on the scene. So be aware. Invest in yourself. Go to your local library. Read. Ask questions. Like I told the previous person that called in, if you have a particular love, if you love to cook, if you love animals, if you love science, get involved in those arenas. Volunteer if you have to. But put yourself out there. Find mentors that will help you. Pull together your skills. I guarantee you there will be work for you. There's plenty of work available. But you have to be the one that is interested enough in yourself to go for it. I don't care if you're 25, 55, 75. Apprenticeships can help. And often it's through showing how good you are that people will say, I want you as part of my team. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to take a break. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Got some fun things to share with you. Don't go away. 888-815-9756. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. Oh, I do have a radio show that I just did. It was pre-recorded, and it will be broadcast. I've got the information, and I will be sharing it with you shortly. But it's so that no matter where you are in the country, you'll be able to listen to it. It will be broadcast, the pre-recorded interview, on a Sunday. But I've got to get the specific dates on that, and this is going to be forthcoming. Have you ever heard of the vegetable lamb of Tartary? I hadn't. And I've got a medieval picture in front of me. Now, this apparently was a myth that was developed. And it's fascinating. I don't think anybody around today, if I were to mention this to anybody, they'd go, duh, what are you talking about? Well, this apparently was considered a half plant, a half animal. And it was a traveler's tale that came from the Far East. Now, it has a Latin name, Planta Tartarica Baronmets. The Baronmets means it's the Tartar name for lamb. Now, the fruit of this particular animal tree was cotton. But European travelers who knew nothing about cotton during medieval times thought it was wool. Now, that was a fabric they did know. Now, wool, they reasoned, came from sheep. So the legend about the vegetable lamb of Tartary is from that. They didn't understand this was a cotton fiber. So what they did, cotton was considered to be the fleece of lambs that grew from the tree and were attached to it by their navels. Let me tell you, the artwork is incredible. So was the belief in this nonsense. Now, it was said that the plant bent to let the lambs graze, and then when they had eaten all the grass that was around them, the lambs and the plant died. Aren't myths amazing things? Who would think that something like that even existed? But they did. Human beings are innovators. They are people that can come up with fascinating ideas. Innovation is something that is needed in the United States very strongly today, and I think we have ample opportunities for it. But let's step back into an environment of war, and let's go back into World War II. How would you expect a Briton who had died and lies buried in a Spanish cemetery to bring around the resolution of saving a country. Doesn't seem possible, does it? Could a corpse make that much of a difference? That's the way it happened. There was a person that had contracted pneumonia in England, and this corpse fooled Nazi intelligence and helped to save thousands and thousands of lives. Now, this was in 1942. The North African campaign was closing down, and the Germans knew that the next objective of the Allies would be Sicily. So it was a matter of desperate urgency on their part to convince them that they were wrong, convince the Nazis, that is, they were wrong. So someone in Royal Naval Intelligence put forth a suggestion. They said, why don't we take a body, ostensibly that of a courier killed in a plane crash, carrying misleading but apparently top-secret papers. And what they would do, they would allow the body to drift ashore on the coast of neutral Spain. Now, the German agents were right there. They were very active. But they would read the papers. They would get all of the information off of that corpse. Now, they had to find a corpse. And they had to find a corpse who, when it would be examined, it would be assumed that the corpse had drowned. So that's why pneumonia was so valuable in the victim. And this body was taken out of the Spanish cemetery, but they had to promise that never, ever would they reveal who this person was. Well, this corpse was renamed Major William Martin, and he was a Royal Marine. The corpse carried papers that had a letter from the Vice Chief of the Imperial General Staff to General Alexander, commanding the 18th Group Army, Army Group in Africa. And it went into quite a bit of detail why he could not have his own way and that the invasion target was not Sicily, but somewhere else in the Western Mediterranean. Now, this corpse, carried also a message from Lord Mountbatten to the Admiral of the Fleet, Sir Andrew Cunningham, and an apparently indiscreet sentence was included hinting that Sardinia was going to be the proposed invasion area. Well, the Major, he was put to work. Yes, the corpse sailed on its first and last assignment on April 19, 1943. He was hidden in the torpedo compartment of HM Submarine Seraph. 11 nights later, the body was lowered over the side, and at dawn, the following morning, the tide washed it towards Huelva, where it was discovered by a fisherman. Now, the Spanish authorities informed the British Vice Consul and Major Martin was buried with full military honors. But there was nothing said about the documents that were on the body. So there was a demand made to Spain, and the papers were eventually returned. The scientific tests proved that the envelopes had been opened, but it wasn't until after the war that Major Martin's contribution was fully realized. Even Hitler had concluded that the attack would be directed mainly against Sardinia. The German high command scattered its forces, left gaps in its defense lines that the Allies were able to exploit, and the invasion of Sicily was opposed by an Italian force and only two German divisions. So a lot of lives were saved because Allied losses on the beaches were reduced. Their invasion was successful. And to this day, no one knows who the corpse was, except the intelligence. Yes, the intelligence office, whose files are probably buried in the bowels of the earth somewhere. This is Donna Sebo. Wherever you are, I hope you're having a magnificent summer. Don't forget, tomorrow we're going to be having a great guest, and I invite you and your friends to join me. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Enjoy life's buffet banquet of wondrous experiences, and don't ever give up your hopes and dreams because they belong to you. And you have the opportunity to make them come true in your own way. This is Donna Siebel. See you tomorrow, same time, same place, right here on BBSRadio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Siebel Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Siebel Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.